return until a new story fi amanillah.
أنا بذكر الله تطمئن القلوب.
In the limelight.
Mamadou Tal, a British Gambian PhD student whose visa was revoked during his involvement in pro-Palestine activism, says he fled the United States due to safety concerns amid the lawlessness of the Trump administration. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. Mamadou Tal, a British Gambian activist and former PhD student at Cornell University, announced on Tuesday, 1st of April, via a statement on his X handle that he is leaving the United States amid threats of deportation. The pro-Palestinian student activist recently filed a lawsuit against the Donald Trump administration over his controversial executive orders targeting pro-Palestinian students at American universities. The Trump administration had already threatened Mamadou Tal with deportation. Mamadou Tal condemned the U.S. government's blatant disregard for the judiciary and the rule of law, whilst criticizing those who remain silent about the ongoing genocide in Gaza. He wrote, "For every person that has remained silent, just know that you're not safe either. Is the imprisonment of those who speak out against the genocide a reflection of your values? Is this the kind of nation that you want to live in?" He said, "The repression of Palestinian solidarity is now being used to wage a wholesale attack on any form of expression that challenges oppressive and exploitative relations in the United States." Mamadou Tal is not an isolated case. The Trump administration recently revoked the visas of over 300 students due to their pro-Palestine activism in the so-called Land of the Free, where freedom of expression is an exclusive right for those who support the U.S. military-industrial complex. While American officials claim the move is tied to international security concerns, a long-standing euphemism for backing the Zionist regime, it clearly exposes the selective nature of freedom of speech and activism in the United States. Defending the policy, the U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio, who is well known for his ties to the Israeli lobby in Washington and AIPAC, said, "We have a right, like every country in the world has a right, to remove you from our country." Rubio also did not hesitate to call those who study at Ivy League universities lunatics simply because they oppose the genocide in the Gaza Strip. We continue with Press TV's coverage of this story. A director of the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, Ben Weisner, has said, "There's something uniquely disturbing about sending a message to the best and the brightest around the world who traditionally have flocked to the United States universities because of their openness, because of their freedom, because of their intellectual vigor, and now say, we don't want you here." Indeed, every country has the authority to revoke visas for non-citizens, whether they are tourists, students, or long-term residents. However, how justified is this action? Massive student protests in university encampments have erupted across the United States in response to The U.S. government's direct support and funding for Israel's ongoing genocide in Gaza. Both American and foreign students at various institutions have raised their voices in outrage over America's complicity with the ongoing massacre and genocide. They have been the only sign of humanity and sanity in the otherwise inhumane and deafeningly silent Western world. These protesters deserve a standing ovation, but instead that honor was given to the murderer presiding over the genocide of more than 50,000 Palestinians in Gaza since October of 2023. Once again, American hypocrisy and double standards on human rights and freedom of expression are on full display. 2 years ago, the deadly riots in the Islamic Republic of Iran were not only backed by the United States, but orchestrated by it. That was fair game for American regime change acolytes, while legitimate student protests in the United States itself are labeled terrorism. Another fitting example is the Hong Kong protests of 2019-2020 over an extradition bill. The bill aimed to close a judicial loophole related to a murder case in Taiwan, but anti-China sentiment fueled widespread unrest, which saw active participation from both local and foreign nationals. Unsurprisingly, the U.S. enthusiastically supported the rioters in Hong Kong, calling their actions a fight for democracy. The then Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, even urged the Chinese government to respect the rights of the protesters, describing the violence in Hong Kong as a cornerstone of democratic freedom. Thus, when protests align with American interests, activism is celebrated and encouraged on the global stage, perhaps even deserving a new Grammy category. Axios website has also covered the same story and tells us more. When pro-Palestine demonstrations occur on American soil, particularly those challenging U.S. foreign policy and its support for the Tel Aviv regime, they are suppressed without question. Ironically, these pro-Palestine protesters have been advocating for the enforcement of American laws, such as the Leahy Law, which the Trump administration has blatantly disregarded. Examining the cases of individuals whose visas and even green cards have been revoked by the Trump administration further underscores blatant American hypocrisy. One might assume those targeted were involved in damaging public property or harming American civilians. However, that is far from the truth. Rumeysa Ozturk, a Turkish graduate student at Tufts University, had her visa revoked for co-authoring an opinion piece on Gaza in the university newspaper, while a Department of Homeland Security spokesperson claimed she engaged in activities supporting the Hamas resistance movement. There is no evidence to support this. Rumeysa Ozturk's article did not mention Hamas at all. She simply wrote about the ongoing genocide in Gaza and demanded that the school divest from the Israeli regime. As a consequence, observers described, and footage confirmed, her detainment by federal agents as a kidnapping rather than an arrest. Other cases include Indian PhD student Ranjani Srinivasan, who fled the U.S. after agents appeared at her Columbia University housing without an arrest warrant. Badar Khan Suri, an Indian postdoctoral student at Georgetown University, was detained, though a federal judge blocked his deportation. Yunseo Chung, a Korean permanent resident, not a visa holder, is currently fighting deportation from the United States. Dr. Rasha Alawiya, a Brown University professor, was deported from Boston, Massachusetts, to her home country of Lebanon, despite holding a valid U.S. visa. Furthermore, reports indicate that Artificial intelligence is being used to catch and revoke visas, suggesting some students may have been flagged solely for liking pro-Palestine social media posts. The targeting of foreign nationals highlights the U.S. selective application of free speech. Not a single pro-Israeli protester or lobbyist has had their visas revoked, despite numerous documented instances of harassment and violence. By targeting international students and threatening deportation, the United States risks losing a global talent pool that has long been crucial to the academic and economic development of America. Another consequence is that students worldwide no longer see the United States as a desirable destination for higher education. Calls to boycott America and American colleges and universities are already growing.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the martyrs. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z with me, Sister Zainab, on RB English Radio. And topic for today is the martyrs. Obviously, this is all... Now, I've chosen I phrased the title like that for a particular reason, because obviously we as, I'd call us normal Muslims or normal believers, whichever of the two terms you prefer, we can gain so many lessons in akhlaq from the martyrs. So that's one aspect. But look, there's another aspect to this, and which is quite amazing. Because when we hear about the martyrs, we always hear that they themselves were always talking about the martyrs and referring to them. So, for example, and I myself am going to refer to a very particular martyr now. I'm referring to a very special recent martyr, His Eminence the Sayyid. So it's said about him that he was always thinking about the fighters, the troops, and he was always thinking about the martyrs. And obviously they... Amongst the troops, many, many martyrs were given over decades. And a particular thing would happen. So when he was talking about the martyrs to other people, so whether to the others, so to some of the actual fighters, or whether, for example, to some of his family members, the tone of his voice would change. And the sparkle in his eyes would change. And you imagine, you obviously are pure-hearted people. They have an amazing tone in their voice. They already have that face that is full of that nur. And they already have a sparkle in the eyes. So just imagine to yourself that everything, in a sense, lights up when they're talking about the martyrs. So I'm not just, and this is not just His Eminence the Sayyid, this is other martyrs. So Ibrahim Hadi too is another one who would always be talking about the martyrs. And then there's the other thing that I'll also explain. Welcome back. This is A to Z on RB English Radio. And obviously I'm talking about the martyrs and how the martyrs are this, in a sense, they're our teacher, one of our best teachers in terms of our akhlaq. And I'm talking about how our martyrs would visibly light up, full of light, full of nur, when they were talking about the martyrs. And I don't know whether you've noticed this in yourself. Because obviously it's said to us that if we, just looking at the face of one of our scholars, I would assume the martyrs, that obviously is sort of, it's almost like worship in itself, and it can give light to our face. So imagine these pure-hearted individuals who were themselves going to become martyrs, then talking about martyrs, and think about the amount of light in their faces. And, you know, obviously what happens when people reach this level of pure-heartedness, and this is really what we're aiming at, to get to this level. So not only will our face light up, not only will our mindset, everything in us be lit up, because we're thinking about these people, whether it's our martyrs, whether it's our imams, whether it's the prophets, this sort of all goes together. But obviously it really goes into the heart. So for example, His Eminence the Sage, when he would hear news or songs or stories about the martyrs, even the ones he didn't know, he would start crying. And just think to yourself, I don't know, for sure you would have seen images of genocide recently. And just think to yourself when you're, and also when, how has that affected you? Do you remember, probably you remember that also you would start crying. And when you think about maybe some of our imams, or when you think about some of the prophets, or when you think about some of our martyrs, you too most likely also start crying. And you know, this is a feeling, this is a mindset, and this is obviously what Islam is about. And I pray that this is today is just a reminder for you of how we need to generate more and more of this, just always getting the nur from our special people, inshallah. And inshallah, you've gained just some of that extra, that nur from today, and look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on IB English Radio, and farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
Standing tall, I feel abandoned, stand elevated, blessed by the prophets, led by the greatest, and peace it was promised. Can you hear my cry? Can you feel my hurt? One day the sun this land of love. Ya Aqsa, hubuka fi qalbi.
movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pit.
On Youth Station. Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID. Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. Well, this is Arab English Radio. And I am Asma. I'm very happy and honored to be here with you once more.
And this is Nahid being with you on this episode.
How emotional you are.
It's a hard question to answer.
Very sweet.
Not that much. But I think what is happening in me is that I got the control over my... Not completely. Many times I lose the control. I'm just training myself.
Yeah.
In the past, I used to be so emotional and I couldn't control.
But you're just so good in controlling it, maybe.
These days, I'm not even good. I'm training myself. I'm trying to be able to control. Mm-hmm. Right.
Emotions in my life, I guess, have got a major role because most of the things whenever we talk about emotion, I just remember that definition in literary schools. We have this introduction to the romantic poets and writers. And then the first thing that you have to remember about the romantic poet is this definition done by William Wordsworth that says, what is poetry? Poetry is a spontaneous overflow of feelings recollected
emotions.
In tranquility. Yeah. So this repulsive... And this being off the cuff with the emotion, I guess, is the thing that plays a major role in my life. Sometimes I hate it about myself, and maybe I can put it the way you just said it. I'm trying to control it. So emotions are a very important engine that we have. They are actually the driving force for the life. If I had to go with my brain, then I would have no...
Of course.
Maybe driving force for the future.
Of course. And I think this is one of the reasons for us having motivations.
Exactly. If it wasn't about my heart, I would have never got into many things.
Maybe my
heart is pushing me towards many things. And then this question, this battle, this struggle... between the heart and the mind is an everlasting thing that you can never claim that I have once made a balance between the two of them.
No, we can never do so.
We can never do. Sometimes it's the mind who is the winner. Sometimes it's the heart who is the winner. And there are some occasions in which the mind is the winner, but it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy to listen to the words of the mind while... the very wild horse of emotion in your heart is running so fast.
Yeah, we all have that logical phase in which we see everything from the perspective of the mind. But even though we see, we try to forget about it and go with the heart and our emotions.
Yeah, I started it with our personal experience because the things that we're going to say in today's episode might actually sound so... sometimes we say something and we ourselves... tell it to ourselves that, are you really a man to go for what you said? It happens for me many times that I say something, I actually come to ask myself, would you be man enough to practice it in your real life? And then there, the answer is very difficult. Now, I want to say that for emotions, we have to control it. But then again, I ask myself, are you a person? Yeah. Are you a person who could control it during different parts of the life?
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Emotions. emotions, the driving forces of us, and sometimes the obstacles on our ways to development.
Many times.
Have you ever experienced the situation in which your emotions are stopping you from going further, from improving,
yes,
from developing yourself?
Yes.
For me, the situations in which my emotions put me in the way of development, these situations are much more.
Yeah.
Like when I compare,
if you put them on a scale, yes. Based on our definition, yes, maybe the occasions in which my heart has pushed me into something and then I improved in it is way more than the numbers of time that my brain pushed me into something and I got successful. And usually I find the reason in the fact that when I have my heart backing me up in doing something, I'm always a winner.
Right.
But when I have my mind backing me up, even if it's a right thing, because I am not heartfeltly actually justified into doing that, I can't be a winner.
Yeah, that is so true. So emotions are not bad.
No, emotions
are not prohibited.
Bad. No.
They it's are not the things that we need to find a way to stop.
Yeah.
We need to control them, but we should never stop being emotional or quit just being an emotional person.
You know, there's this story of creation. You know how the poets and writers try to make everything look so poetic. There are many stories. One of the stories that I guess you also know is that God created a human heart and kept it in a box. And then the angels came and asked him things about that box. And then God said, this is the most precious thing about this creation that I have created. I have kept this heart in this box because this is so worthy and valuable. This is actually the entire creation is about that heart.
Yeah, and it's not a brain. It's the heart.
No, it's not the brain. Though I have now two emotional people are talking about brain, the battle of brain and the heart. For sure, to us, it's the heart who is the winner. But we have to be honest that sometimes the heart would work as, you know, it would get in the way of your improvement. Sometimes you love something so much, a journey, a major, a person, whatever. It can be anything. A home even that you want to buy. You love something so much that you would ignore all the faults that you see in them. In the things, I mean, or in the people. So in this way, you're going to get stuck in a situation where there's no improvement coming out of
right.
it. But then you keep in that problem. You keep up with that problem. You keep up participating in that thing, or you keep up repeating that mistake for many times just because you love that person, just because you love that thing, you love that decision that you're making. But if you listen to your mind, maybe you're going to get into a better conclusion.
So true. You know, for myself, I have this slogan that to the extent that my heart is controlling my mind, it's okay. Like, it's okay to know that the right decision is this, but you are going a little in a different
exactly.
way. But once my heart closes my eyes, at this point, I need to change.
Exactly. You see, there are many Islamic stories that we have in our heritage that tell us that it's not always the story of heart and mind. Like, you know, sometimes it's the whole purpose of your life. I always, whenever I'm coming to talk about the story of heart and mind, I just remember the battlefield of Karbala. Like, the people who participated in that fight and they came to support Imam Hussein alayhi salam, who were actually very few of men. But then all of them, what they did was not a mind sort of trade. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's mind would never encourage you to get into a battle that you know.
Actually, the opposite will happen with the
exactly,
mind.
Exactly. The mind would tell you that, okay, this battle that you're entering has got no consequence, no benefits for you, has got no positive consequences.
Right.
But you get into that battle because you know that no matter what happens to you, at the end of the journey, God is there.
Yeah.
God is the one you're trading with. That's why you go there with your heart.
Yeah, exactly. And on the other side, when we look at the Islamic thoughts and teachings, whenever we are overwhelmed with the emotions and we do not know either to stay reluctant, not make any decisions, or go for one of the ways, we have many techniques that will help us and foster our decisions, that will help us to know either if we have to go for the mind or the thoughts and emotions.
Yeah, to know them, we go for a break and then we come back.
Sure.
I was too proud to see the truth and prostrate to you until I took the first step. And that's when you opened the doors for me. Now, alone, I realize what I was missing by being far from you.
So based on Islamic narrations, you have to make a balance between your heart and your mind.
Right.
Though it's very difficult, but you have to try to do that. In many occasions, what we have been encouraged to do is to actually trust our heart. Because I usually think that, well, this is my assessment actually. This is the thing that I have got. In my theories and in my analysis, I get it this way that heart is stronger than mind to back you up in difficult situations.
Of course it is.
Like the heart, you know, just as I brought up the story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his followers, it's the heart that would, out of love, push you into doing something that based on the worldly criteria is not going to come any benefit out of it. It's only the heart. Like, you know, we have many stories that would tell you that you have to trust your heart as well as your mind. So based on the worldly criteria, we can put it this way that you must obtain this balance between your heart and mind, but it's difficult, though try to keep it in mind that sometime it is the heart that would push you into the much more adventurous way, but at the end of the day, when you get to the concluding point, it is the heart that would get you in the endings that are pretty much more beautiful.
Yeah, so true. And that emotion that is the driving force, when it is controlled, when it is to the extent that it can push us in the better way, it's okay. But when we are overwhelmed and when we are pressurized by our emotions, in Islam we have many techniques, be it the pray. Simply just praying and having dua, talking.
Which is a sort of purification.
Exactly.
Even if you cry, you are bringing out all the negative energies inside of you, and then you try to seek help from God.
It's like you are sorting your emotions, finding the good ones, and then continuing your journey with the emotions that are the driving forces of life.
Yeah, exactly. The meditation, they call it meditation, but in the Islamic heritage, we call it praying.
Pray.
Also, reading and reciting the Holy Book of Quran can help you so much to attain that balance between your heart and emotion. There are many people who, when they get into a difficult situation, when they're stuck in a perplexing situation, they seek refuge in Holy Book of Quran. And when they recite different verses of this book, they can feel that God is actually helping them sort everything out.
So true. Also asking for advice from the Muslim scholars available.
Exactly, yeah.
And this way we can get in touch with them. We can just communicate and get the ideas, the things that we need in order to find the correct way when we are in the battle of the mind and the heart.
You know, it's just as I said before, it's not much about the story of heart and the mind. It's about what God wants us to do. Which one is the best choice I have to go for at this situation?
You can just look at Ahlul Bayt, alayhim assalam. You can see the way they were choosing their ways and the way they were sacrificing the mind and this worldly materials.
Yeah, like Sayyidah Zainab, salamullah alayha, when she's asked what you're seeing, what you saw, and then she said, I saw nothing but the beauty. It is not the mind telling you this. It's the heart.
Of course.
It's a mindful heart actually telling you this, because she knows where she's going. She knows what happened to them. She knows everything behind the curtains. That's why what she sees is nothing but the beauty.
Yeah, and what she had seen is nothing that the mind will label as beauty.
Exactly, but it needs a mindful heart, as I just told you. So this was all for today. I hope you have just enjoyed it. Until another session, I wish you happiness, health, and, of course, try to care more for your heart.
So until the next time, wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that, inshallah, in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
The limelight.
New China tariffs against the United States will go into effect on 10th of April. Stock markets worldwide careened even lower on Friday, 4th of April, after China matched President Donald Trump's big raise in tariffs. We take a look at the global media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Fox News Channel has covered this story and tells us more. China announced on Friday, 4th of April, it will impose 34% tariffs on the United States, just days after President Donald Trump unveiled the same amount against Beijing under his reciprocal tariff plan. The new China tariffs against the United States will go into effect on 10th of April, according to the Wall Street Journal. Donald Trump wrote on his Truth Social platform on Friday, 4th of April, China played it wrong. They panicked. The one thing they cannot afford to do. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Guo Jiakun said the U.S. announced tariff hikes on imports from many countries, including China, under the pretext of reciprocity. This gravely violates World Trade Organization WTO rules and undermines the rules-based multilateral trading system. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Guo Jiakun added, China firmly rejects this and will do what is necessary to defend our legitimate rights and interests. We have emphasized more than once that trade and tariff wars have no winners. Protectionism leads nowhere. We urge the United States to stop doing the wrong thing and resolve trade differences with China and other countries through consultations with equality, respect, and mutual benefit. The 34% tariffs announced against China on Wednesday come in addition to the 20% tariffs already imposed against the country by the Trump administration. Representative Jeff Van Drew, Republican of New Jersey, told Fox Business Channel, "We knew this was going to be a little bit bumpy in the beginning, but let's understand what it's all about. It's about fairness. It's about America first and not America last. We have been getting the short end of the stick for years, and it's important that Americans understand this. These are reciprocal tariffs. We have been tariffed. Our goods are tariffed. We're always at the unfair disadvantage with these countries, so it's going to be a little bumpy. They're going to cry, they're going to yell," he added. "I spoke to President Trump personally yesterday. He was telling me that already countries are coming to him saying, let's work this out. We can make a fair deal. We can do better. We will do better. Everybody just hold on a little bit. Be a little bit strong. Wall Street will come back. But this is also about Main Street. This is about making things in America." President Trump touted his sweeping tariff plan at a Make America Wealthy Again event, arguing that It will restore the American dream and bolster jobs for U.S. workers. American steel workers, auto workers, farmers, and skilled craftsmen. We have a lot of them here with us today. They really suffered gravely. They watched in anguish as foreign leaders have stolen our jobs. Foreign cheaters have ransacked our factories, and foreign scavengers have torn apart our once beautiful American dream. We had an American dream that you don't hear so much about these days. You did 4 years ago, and you are now, but you don't too often. But now it's our turn to prosper, and in doing so, use trillions and trillions of dollars to reduce our taxes and pay down our national debt. President Trump added, and it will all happen very quickly. With today's action, we're finally going to be able to make America great again, greater than ever before. Jobs and factories will come roaring back into our country, and you'll see it happening already. We will supercharge our domestic industrial base. The trade announcements have sparked uncertainty about the cost of goods to Americans, which White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt brushed aside on Tuesday at a press conference, arguing the tariff plan is going to work. The American newspaper The Wall Street Journal has also covered President Trump's latest tariffs and how international markets have reacted. A sharp rise in trade war intensity sent Wall Street spiraling on Friday, 4th of April, pushing the NASDAQ index into a bear market, denoting a 20% decline from its peak. China's decision to apply a 34% levy to all imported goods from the United States next Thursday, 10th of April, after President Donald Trump tariffs go into effect, rattled international markets in part because it further deflated hopes that a global settlement could be reached soon. Further hitting sentiment, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, said the U.S. economy was more likely to face a period of higher prices and weaker growth than seemed possible a few weeks ago, because of larger-than-anticipated tariff hikes. The Standard & Poor's 500 index dropped 6%, the NASDAQ slid 5.8%, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 2,231 points. The carnage was widespread, with 14 Standard & Poor's 500 stocks rising for the day and 28 dropping 10% or more. The market-wide toll from a two-day tariff rout surged to a record $6.6 trillion. The torrent of selling late this week shows investors coming to grips with the grim implications of the standoff. The levies announced late on Wednesday were deeper and more aggressive than the business world had expected. Retaliation stands to intensify the economic effects of the policies, which could reduce consumer income and slow economic growth. Now investors are bracing for further conflict, none of which is likely to improve the outlook for the global economy or corporate profits, the strongest driver of stock prices. Even as President Trump left the door open to making deals, he vowed new tariffs on drugs and microchips. Investors took little comfort from Donald Trump's stated willingness to negotiate. JP Morgan Chase analyst on Thursday boasted that their odds on a global recession has now increased to 60%. President Trump remained unbowed, saying that now is a great time to get rich and that China played it wrong. They panicked. The Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, acknowledged that markets are crashing, but said economies weren't and that global businesses would adjust to the new environment. Investors drew little solace from an unexpectedly strong jobs report. That showed the economy added 228,000 jobs last month, giving little sign that uncertainty ahead of the tariff rollout had derailed the labor market. On Friday, 4th of April, major U.S. indices opened sharply lower before staging a modest recovery late in the morning after President Trump said Vietnam's leader wants to cut its tariffs to zero. Another mild rally pushed prices off their lows later on in the day. Overseas markets took fresh hits, with European stocks tumbling more than 4%. Traders have ramped up bets on interest rate cuts this year, figuring the U.S. Federal Reserve will have to shore up the economy. Oil prices slid further, with benchmark U.S. crude falling to about $62 a barrel, its lowest level since 2021. Investors rushed into the treasuries, pushing 10-year yields well below 4% before they drifted back up late on Friday. Bonds in other big economies, including Japan, Germany, and Britain, also rallied. Bond yields fell as prices rose. The U.S. dollar, which fell sharply on Thursday, 3rd of April, rebounded somewhat, but remains near its weakest levels of the year.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is part of the speech delivered on April 26, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in meeting with a number of university students and academic personalities on the 24th day of month of Ramadan. As for the elimination of ideals, it means making individuals indifferent towards poverty, corruption, and discrimination. From the viewpoint of the enemy, there must be a fight against the efforts to destroy these three big devils and evil elements: poverty, corruption, and discrimination. They want to render individuals indifferent towards them. They want individuals to be indifferent towards the domination of Western culture, make them less motivated about standards of the Islamic Revolution. Well, the revolution has certain standards which have shaken the whole world and which stimulate resistance in countries. These standards are resistance against corruption and the refusal to give in to bullying and to being blackmailed. These are the standards of the Islamic Revolution. These are the standards of Islamic Iran. These have shaken the world and Islamic countries and have attracted nations to Iran.
Subhanallah, hamdan lillah, wa la ilaha illallah. Subhanallah, hamdan lillah.
our president showed their presence among the people in Islamic countries, despite their various orientations, some of them had completely different political orientations, the people chanted slogans for them and expressed their support. What is the reason for this? Why is the flag of the Islamic Republic raised by other people in different countries, but the flag of the US is burned? These standards have moved the world. Therefore, they want to undermine these standards inside the country and make individuals lose their motivation for them. Other standards include a return to original Islam, the rejection of reactionary attitude, and resistance on the issue of Palestine, which I will discuss at the end of my statements, God willing. So these are the main concerns. We must have these concerns. Who the people who wish to eliminate identity, the ideals, and independence are, what their number is, and how successful they are, is another issue. This discussion falls on you. You must sit down and discuss and study them in your meetings, but you should know, and you surely know, that such a thing exists. These are the concerns.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
It is only the second visit after his U.S. trip since the International Criminal Court issued an arrest warrant against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in November 2024 and his first visit to Europe since October 7, 2023. As a party to the Rome Statute, Hungary was required to act on the ICC warrant, but it ignored its obligations. In a press conference, Orban stated that Netanyahu's visit aims to deepen military and intelligence cooperation as well as economic ties between the two sides. He stated that Israel is one of Hungary's largest trading partners.
What makes this matter sad is that today here in Budapest, the killer of 50,000 Palestinian citizens, mostly innocent women, children, and elderly, is here in town. That's the sad part about it.
While Israeli flags were hoisted on government buildings and all bridges across the Danube, anti-Netanyahu protests have been banned by the authorities.
Since the beginning of the genocidal war, 544 days now, there was a clear position from the Hungarian government saying that any pro-Palestine protests will not be permitted or allowed, and that's why people couldn't express their opinion clearly.
Smaller, spontaneous protests occurred throughout the day, resulting in fines and arrests. One activist who had been fined several times stated that she was not even informed of the reason for the fines.
No, and the second time they pretended not to speak English until I was done. They spoke English and told me they do speak English. And when I asked them why, they refused to answer the two times.
Orban is not the only European leader who announced his willingness to defy international law. This state visit could set a precedent many around Europe fear.
This is, I think, one of the delicate elements of this issue, that it's not only Orban. It may be Merz in the near future. Tusk, the Prime Minister of Poland, has said the same.
Despite Orban's breach of international law, European governments have remained silent. As a result, observers believe that this is just the first of several upcoming trips to EU member states. Germany's next Chancellor, Friedrich Merz, has already signaled his intention to invite Netanyahu and refuses to commit his country to enforce the ICC arrest warrant. Dieter Reinisch, Budapest.
We are here to denounce the ongoing massacres in Gaza and the Israeli incursion in Dara. The people resisted bravely, sacrificing martyrs in the fight against occupation. We stand with them and will never accept Israeli control over our land.
As Israeli airstrikes on Syria escalate, the response from the international community remains absent. In Dara, however, the people have taken matters into their own hands. The popular resistance in southern Syria has proven that armed struggle remains the only way to confront Israeli expansion.
We stand with our brothers in Dara, just as we stand with Gaza. Resistance will never be defeated. Just as Gaza's fighters remain strong, so too will the resistance in Syria. Syrians and Palestinians are united, and together we will defeat Israeli occupation.
Beyond the battlefield, many protesters also blamed Arab regimes for their complicity in Israel's crimes. Calls for accountability rang out against Arab leaders, accusing them of betraying the Palestinian cause and enabling Israeli aggression in the region.
The Israeli occupation will fall. It's only a matter of time, but those who betrayed Gaza and Dara, like Jordan, Egypt, the UAE, and others, must be held accountable. Their complicity is a crime, and no matter what they do, the people will triumph.
With every act of Israeli aggression, the spirit of resistance grows stronger. Today's protests in Damascus and other Syrian cities are yet another testament to the unwavering determination of Syrians and Palestinians to defeat Israel. Ali Mohammed, Damascus.
In Al-Katiba area in northwestern Khan Yunis, which is included within the so-called safe zone and not far from the infamous Al-Mawasi area, last night the families inside this neighborhood were sleeping and suddenly a massive explosion happened that shook the entire neighborhood. This home, which belongs to Al-Aggad family, was targeted last night, killing the entire family inside this house, father, the mother, and the three little children. But not only that, because of the devastating and massive scale of the bombardment, two of the neighbors as well were killed within this airstrike that was carried by the Israeli occupation.
You can see how closely the homes are built here. We were jolted awake by a thunderous blast, only to find the remains of neighbors scattered across the streets. Our neighborhood has already borne the brunt of Israel's aggression, and now, despite being labeled as a safe zone and instructed to be sought refuge here, we are still enduring relentless bombardment.
The families could collect the remains of the family and the neighbors due to this brutal attack that literally turned the family inside this home into pieces. The neighbors are still cleaning the rubble, looking for any of the remains of the family that was killed here.
The attack was so intense that we thought our home had been bombed, but it was our neighbors. We are still clearing the rubble, searching for more remains of the children who were killed alongside their parents here. These innocent people did nothing to deserve such a brutal end. We call on everyone in the world to put an end to this genocide.
This is the situation inside the so-called safe zone, where the occupation is now directing the families in southern Khan Yunis and Rafah to come to. More massacres and more killing is awaiting the